Off top, Bills playoff run last year, more impressive than the Rams. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, welcome back. Episode 2 of the Dominique Foxworth Show. My guy, Charlie Kravitz, is here. Looking fantastic. This was an emergency recording, so Charlie's bed is, or his bedroom is a shambles. I appreciate you showing up for me, Charlie.
I got pushed into the guest room because this emergency recording, I wasn't able to sort of secure the home office space, which is being used by my better half. So you got the bedroom for this pod.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Full disclosure, we recorded 2 episodes yesterday. One was good, and I thought one wasn't good. So I really appreciate all of you guys coming back and making it better, because we are not putting out garbage product. We only put out the pure uncut, right, Charlie?
That's right. Plus, this is better, like, speaking in that analogy, like, I'm in full-on football crackhead mode because we are on the precipice of, like, the best day of the year. We get to see football again.
Oh, and it's such a great game that we're starting off with. Like, I feel like you as a producer and me as, like, a talker of this stuff, like, we've been scraping the bottom of the barrel all summer. Now we're finally here, and we got Bills, Rams. I guess I should get into my off the top, because I know it sounds absurd because the Rams won the Super Bowl, but today on Debatable, I stumbled into the realization that I believe that the Bills playoff run was much more impressive. And in the time that I had to prepare for this show, I looked up some numbers and I was right. Like, by most statistical, offensively, at least statistical measures, the Bills were significantly better than just about everybody else. Like, EPA per play, or excuse me, EPA per game is like, I've pledged not to drown people in boring statistics. I'll just tell you the outcome and trust that I've looked up all the boring statistics, so I'm not making things up. But this specific boring statistic is, like, shocking. EPA per play offensively. Again, it's like offensive efficiency. The Bills were 28.3 in the playoffs last year. The league average is around, like, 3 or 4 or 2. I could look that up. League average is, well, anyway, the Rams were 1.49, which is not even close to give you an understanding of the discrepancy there. All right, I'm looking up the league average right now. League average last season for EPA per game was 1.59. The Bills offensively were 28 in the playoffs last year. That is crazy. They surprisingly, though, I expected their defense to pan out a little better in the statistical analysis, but I guess I kind of didn't account for the fact that Patrick Mahomes went bananas on them. But they were about average on defense. The Rams were much better there, but it boils down to the quarterback position. As much as I hate to admit it, that's what it boils down to at the end of every conversation. We start at quarterbacks and we end up at quarterbacks. And the reason why I remember the Bills run last year more fondly than I do the Rams run is the way that Josh Allen played, man. And
yeah,
not that Matt Stafford, it was a real, like, important career defining moment in run for Matt Stafford. And he threw a damn no look pass in the most important pivotal moment in the Super Bowl. So don't get me wrong, he's great. But when I think back through last year's playoffs, Jaquaski Tartt's name pops into my mind. Mm-hmm. And that mars my memory of Matt Stafford, which is probably not fair. And if you don't remember, Matt Stafford in the fourth quarter tried to throw away their trip to the Super Bowl by throwing the ball into the chest of a 49ers safety named Jaquaski Tartt. He dropped it, and the rest is history. Now the Rams are remembered as a great team.
Isn't it kind of funny, though, that we're looking at this game and Matt Stafford's the one who has highs and lows and not Josh Allen at this point? That's the crazy part to me. Cause, like, if you think of the most, like, the signature throws of the playoffs last year too, Stafford has those as well. Like the winner against the Bucks, the entire drive in the Super Bowl, where he just peppered Cooper Kupp, but he's the up and down guy. Josh Allen is the rocket ship guy now.
And that's so crazy too, because Josh Allen was not, we remember his playoff run last year and he was good last year. Yeah. But he was not as consistent last year as he was the year before. He was nowhere near as inconsistent as he was to start his career. So he's put that behind him. But he was great last year, but he wasn't as great as I think we remember him, in part because that playoff run, man, I mean, we could take it game by game in the playoffs. There's only two of them, and he was bananas in both.
Sorry, but that like leads to like the most important point about Josh Allen is that last year was the regression year. Like he exploded 2 years ago. Because touchdown and interception luck.
Oh God.
Regressed to normal. So like that's to me like a baseline for him in the regular season last year, and that's why like I almost think that we're getting smarter as a football public, knowing that the Bills should be the favorite, because like we discussed this a little bit earlier, but traditionally you have famous head coach, famous quarterback, Super Bowl champion, prestige defensive players. You return everyone. You're the favorites, but like. We get it. We had eyeballs. We saw Josh Allen.
Yeah, it's the glut of sports media and our decision collectively to all watch it. And oh no, actually, that's not true. It's just that Josh Allen threw for a billion touchdowns in the playoffs, and he's big and put the whole team on his back. And they got guys everywhere. You said the Rams brought everyone back. No, they didn't. They lost a couple guys. They lost left tackle and Whitworth. They lost Von Miller, who was a late season addition, but was awesome in the playoffs. They lost Odell Beckham Jr. unless he ends up getting healthy and signing with them later in the season, which like really he was on track to be the MVP of the Super Bowl until he got injured. So they are not the same, and they aren't bringing back the same quarterback. They're bringing back a quarterback with a elbow injury that is baseball in nature, which scares everyone.
Okay, the one thing about Stafford, I've thought about Stafford a lot with this team. The vibes around the Rams in general are weird.
Yeah.
These are the most normal vibes for Matt Stafford. Like, sort of hurt, we're not sure he's going to play. Yeah. And then we all look stupid when he plays just like Matt Stafford always plays for the last decade. That happens every week of every season.
That's fair. In previewing this game, I feel like we've been talking about these teams in isolation. We have not previewed the matchup necessarily, but some people will be listening to this before the game. And I think some people probably pick it up after the game. And the fun thing about that, I don't know if I'm the only one who does this, is I like listening to podcasts after the events have happened, because then I can decide whether I think the host was smart or not. So you guys can let me know, but I put in some work. I feel like I'm going to be right on. The Bills are going to win, obviously. So go ahead and put that out of your memory. Put all your money on it. Don't sue me if you lose it all. But the matchup in this game, or the key to this game, is the Rams O-line against the Bills pass rush, in my view. And the Bills, they are not strong at corner, but I don't think it matters as much. Tre'Davious White is out, their best cornerback, but I don't think it matters as much because they're going to major in two-man, which is two high safeties, man coverage underneath that'll protect the corners from getting attacked deep. They're able to do that in part because their D-line is really good at getting pressure. They were, I think, top five, top 10 team in pass rush win rate last year. And they lost Jerry Hughes. He went to Houston, who was probably their most effective pass rusher. But you know who they replaced him with? That guy, Von Miller, who I think had a win rate that was equal to Hughes and was much better than that in the playoffs. And if he is playing at that level, he's going to be fine. They got Oliver in the middle. He's a great pass rusher. So they will be fine rushing the passer. And that's going to be the question. And so I expect the Rams in that zone running attack, they're going to lean on that because they're going to have to try to pull one. I forgot the fact that those two high safeties, which is where the pressure is going to be on, those guys are maybe the best safety tandem in football. So I'm not as worried about the corners going into this game as I think a lot of people are.
I actually think the running game for the Rams, this weird vibe Sean McVay thing. And I say that because like he was really committed to Cam Akers last year coming back from injury when he wasn't that good. And he has sort of backed off that this offseason. Like for the first time, he's been postulating about having two number one running backs, having Daryl Henderson in the mix. Who knows if who they'll add to it. And you gave real analysis. I'm going to go vibes analysis. That seems like less confidence in the running game than Sean McVay normally has. And to your point, if that's essential for beating this Bills team, that doesn't seem positive. Is that fair for me to say that I feel less confident because of that?
I was about to say don't undersell your analysis, but you didn't undersell it. You just said it was different. It's vibes, and the vibes are important. In the running game is slightly more important.
Yeah,
because the two high safeties, if you don't know a ton about football, it just means that there's one less person in the running game. So if they can run the ball effectively and pull one of those safeties into the box in order to stop the run, if they're able to do that, that will then allow them to play action and also attack the only real weakness of this Bills defense, the receivers. So that is where they're going to have to start. And I know that the numbers support that you do not need to run the ball well to have effective play action, but you are going to need to run the ball well to expose those corners, which is where the weakness is. And their linebackers aren't great. Maybe Sean McVay will find ways to try to isolate them and play action also. But particularly with the arm issues of Matt Stafford, we don't know how serious they are, but I would suspect that they do not want to start taxing him a lot early. So even if it's fine, they want to try to get through this early part of the season with him throwing or putting as little stress on his elbow as possible. So it's going to come down to, and if you're watching the game, you want to sound smart when you're watching the game, or you just want to watch the game and enjoy it. I find that I enjoy football games more when I lock in on something specific. Mm-hmm. That's what you should be watching, is on third downs in particular, also on first downs, where the safeties are, and also how effective the run game is for the Rams, because that's going to tell the story. If they can run them out of that too high look, because I think that was their number one coverage last year, was two man. The Bills' number one pass coverage was two high safeties with man underneath, essentially protecting their corners and relying on their defensive line to get pressure and force the ball out.
So one other thing about this. Do you think Allen Robinson is extra comfortable now that Matt Stafford's hurt? He's like, I'm back. I'm used to bad quarterback play. This has been my entire career. Or is he just crushed right now?
Oh, man. I think that Allen Robinson, I don't want to sell him short. He had a down year a bit last year. He's still good. But I feel like people are higher on his what his performance is going to be this year than I am. And maybe they think you just plug him in the system. Like, I think his style as a receiver, combined with the Matt Stafford issue, is not exactly what they would want. And I know you're high on him because he's like a true big body number one receiver, but I don't know if that's what they need as much as they need someone who can get open and take the pressure off of Matt Stafford and take coverages away from Cooper Kupp.
Yeah. So for me, the thing that I thought was interesting was just how you, obviously he's a totally different player than Odell Beckham. Like anyone with eyeballs can see that. But the interesting thing about when they plugged in Beckham was he became like their goal line threat. And like, just like everything that we know about football, guys who can catch contested passes are like guys who are usually great at the goal line. And so it seems like weirdly in that role, that limited role that they created for Odell Beckham in half a season, like Allen Robinson should be able to replace that stuff. And that's what's sort of tantalizing about it.
That is fair. And so the other thing about having a guy like Odell Beckham, and you don't always get to see the impact of a player like that. And it's like the Tyreek Hill effect, I think, is the best example of this in football right now, is that he's such a threat for the big play that other things will happen around him that you don't necessarily credit him for, but people are wide open. People are getting coverages shifted because Odell Beckham is somebody that you're going to look at, because, you know, if you get him a short pass, he can go to the crib. You give him, and he can also get open and run past people. Allen Robinson was never a speedster, and he's not a quick shifty guy, and he is getting long in the tooth. So, man, I'm an old man. I just said long in the tooth. I hate myself right now. He's getting older, and relying on him to be that guy, I feel like you're judging me right now.
No, you're very self-aware.
Oh gosh, it was gross. Relying on him to be that guy, that pressure release, with the offensive line the way it is. And I mean, the offensive line isn't bad, but we have questions about what it's going to be. And somebody who is quick like Odell can get open quickly would be nice. Cooper Kupp is that guy also, but having a second option like that would be great. So, I mean, Allen Robinson is going to be good. He might have the best career of his life, or the best year of his life, because he'll be with a quarterback, assuming Stafford is healthy, that is actually above average, which I don't think he's ever had.
I don't even know if he's had a league average quarterback, to be honest. Just tough scene for a guy.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, I feel like this is a recurring theme over two podcasts now, is I want to know about gambling. I need to start learning about gambling. I never bet. Is there a line on this game? I know you're, you say you're not a good gambler, but like, I know you keep up with the
line. Yeah, the Bills are 2.5 point favorites. Okay, you get 2 points for being at home.
Yeah.
That's built into the line.
But isn't, I feel like home field advantage is like evaporated, or maybe that was in part because of the COVID year. But in the last few years, I think home field advantage wasn't as impactful as we think it is, but they still give 2 points for travel and I don't know, crowd noise. Yeah,
and the thing is, and obviously this is, I don't know if it applies to this game, but well, I think a lot of gamblers in football look for home underdogs because those generally tend to overperform. Okay. And like, it is sort of funny that the first home dog of the season is the Super Bowl champs. And like, so like there actually could be the gambling aspect of this could be interesting because it's like, you know, an undervaluing of a team that actually, you know, outperformed what they should have done over the last 5 weeks of the season is pretty interesting.
Do they ever actually lose that game though? Cause it's always the Super Bowl champ always hosts, right? Don't they normally host the season opener? Like yeah. The Bucks won it last year. I feel like that Thursday night opener game, the Super Bowl champ plays some normally high powered team from the other conference. And they always, I feel like they always end up winning, but I'm picking against them this time.
Yeah, I am too. And I feel like part of that, like Patriots were probably just the best team for the last 20 years and they always hosted that game. So that's a huge part of probably swinging the statistics.
That's fair.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
All right. I have a note that I wanted to share with everyone. Before we get into talking about these games and telling you what to look for and what to expect and getting all excited about all the important must-watch games this weekend, I decided to tell everybody, don't overreact. We're all going to overreact anyway, and I'm about to pre-overreact for you, but I look back at last year, week one. Here's a couple results for you. The Steelers beat the Bills. I don't know if you remember this or not, but the Steelers beat the Bills in week one of last season. I would assume it must have been like a lot of pressure. Like TJ Watt probably went bananas, had some sack fumbles. I don't remember the specifics of that game. I do feel like Ben Roethlisberger, or I know Ben Roethlisberger was starting and throwing a bunch of 3 to 6 yard passes, right? And that was not indicative of what was to come for either side. I bet Steelers fans were feeling really good about themselves and then not.
Yeah. Held the Bills to 16 points in that game. That was the aberration.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. Great defense, but neither of those teams turned out to be that by season end. The Cardinals went to the Titans and beat the Titans, which I don't know. That Titans won the AFC. I don't know if you guys remember that or not. a year where we have possibly the most competitive AFC that we've ever had, as many franchise quarterbacks, and I mean, not even franchise quarterbacks, like MVP caliber quarterbacks, even the ones who haven't won it, we could all see them winning an MVP eventually. You know who won? Tannehill and them. They won a division with Derrick Henry getting hurt, or not the division, the conference.
Yeah.
They didn't win to go to Super Bowl, but they were number one in the conference throughout the regular season without Derrick Henry for part of that season. But they started the season by losing to the Cardinals. Here's the biggest one. Do you remember, this is what prompted me to look into this, is because I actually remember this particular game. Mm-hmm. The Packers and the Saints. You remember it was 38-3? And yes. Aaron Rodgers had a QBR. For those who don't know, QBR is like probably the best stat we have for quarterback rating right now. It's imperfect, but it's the best we have. And league average is about, last year was 56.6. Aaron Rodgers had a QBR of 18.8 in that game, and they got mollywopped. I think Jameis Winston had the best week of any quarterback that in that particular game, and they beat them 38-3. That, I mean, Aaron Rodgers went from that 18 QBR to go on and win the MVP and choke it away in the playoffs. That's not fair. He didn't choke it away, but they did not win in the playoffs once again. And I also just looked at the Taylor Heineke's QBR in yards per attempt, which are stats that we respect for quarterbacks. Washington played the Chargers, and everyone's beloved Justin Herbert came in behind Taylor Heineke in week one in QBR and yards per attempt. So that is how I am selling you on all the big overreactions that we are getting ourselves ready for. You must know that it means something, because it's only 17 of them, so they're really valuable. But let's not like lock our opinions completely in based on what we see this coming week.
Can I give you a quick take on this?
Oh, I love quick takes. What's up?
Jameis is going to do it again this year. And he went 14 for 20 last year in that week one opener with 5 touchdown passes. I'm not saying he's going to do that. That's obviously a statistical anomaly, but the Saints went from like the worst receiving core in the NFL to actually a pretty good one when they get Michael Thomas back, Chris Olave, and Jarvis Landry. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to get some early Jameis fireworks that convinces everyone this is the year from him again. And it's probably going to be fool's gold.
I like that take. I'm with you on that. I think Jameis has the potential to do that. And then the following week, we'll see. I mean, I was really excited.
He wasn't that bad last year. We should say that. He wasn't that bad last year. He just got hurt.
Right. Yeah. So that's what I was going to say, is we never saw the full Jameis Winston outside of Tampa Bay under Sean Payton experience. Mm-hmm. We're still not going to see it because Sean Payton was like, nah, I'm good. He left as a part of that alleged scheme, but it didn't work out the way that he was supposed to end up as the coach of the Miami Dolphins with Tom Brady at quarterback. Man, summer's been gone by fast.
Wait, you aren't as excited about the Dennis Allen system as the Sean Payton system? No,
I mean, to be fair, Dennis Allen in that defense has probably been the most consistent thing that they've had in the last several years. So, no, I'm not excited about Dennis Allen as an offensive mind, but we'll see. Yeah. I had high expectations for Jameis Winston, because he showed us such a high bar, and I thought that it was going to with a very low floor. And I thought that Sean Payton was going to clean it up. We never saw it, but maybe we'll see it this year and he'll do it consistently. But
week one against the Falcons. That's you heard it here first.
Yeah.
A lot of fantasy points.
It's not a risky take right there. Jameis is going to go off against the Falcons in week one. But I don't know. We'll see how the Saints, are you willing to consider the Saints as a division challenger to the Bucks? I know they beat the Bucks in the regular season, like all four of the last two seasons, right?
Yeah, and I mean, all four of
the games in the last two seasons.
I totally am. I might get freezing cold takes here if I look like a complete idiot, but process wise, I do. It's also like, I don't think the Bucks are as good this year. That division is super weak outside of that, and it's like the Saints have a lot of infrastructure, and I can't think of. I'm not the first one to come up with this take, so this is obvious for everyone, but I can't think of a position group that had a bigger overhaul than the receiver group for the Saints. And if you have a quarterback like Jameis Winston that wants to push the ball downfield, and you end up with someone like Chris Olave, who's a true blue chipper. Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas went from overrated to underrated so quickly that we just forgot about it. Like, because he just became like a someone who got mocked by other defensive backs around the league for only running slants, but he was still really good. It's not like he was a bum. And Jarvis Landry is like a unique safety blanket. And sorry, but this was like Tre'Quan Smith last year and Marquez Callaway, like tearing it up in the preseason. And like, this is a very different offense, and it looks like Kamara is going to play. So yeah, I think the Saints are one of those teams that might be a lot better than the public realizes.
The game that you kind of teed up for us to talk about right there, you brought up the Bucks, yeah. And you may not be as high on the Bucks as anyone else. So they are hosting the Cowboys week one again this year. And I think this is one of those games that afterwards we're going to feel differently about one of these two teams. And the Bucks, everyone loved them before training camp started. Like, they'll be back, they're loaded, and then they started getting hurt on the offensive line. And now there's like a question: can they protect Tom Brady, and can Tom Brady operate behind an offensive line that is not as perfect, frankly, as they have been in the past couple of seasons? So it'll be an interesting question, because they're going against the Cowboys, whose defense was their defensive effectiveness was largely predicated on turnovers. So I'd like to see if they can actually play good, consistent, strong defense, because I do not think they're going to get 11 interceptions from Trayvon Diggs again this season. And as good as Micah Parsons is you have
Micah Parsons is terrifying. Never forget.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like I should change the cover art of this show to just Micah Parsons, because he deserves for us all to talk about him more often. He's one of the most impressive players in football, and he's just 1 year in. But he is not impressive enough to make up for the other deficiencies of this defense. Dan Quinn got a lot of credit last year for things that you can't really coach. Like, you can't coach fumbles lost. You can't really coach interceptions. So it'll be interesting to see if they can stand up. So this will be an interesting matchup. That's what I really care about. I know you want to talk about Dak, and can he overcome the offensive line issues and the lack of receivers? But more than anything, I don't think of the Cowboys as a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
I think of the Bucks as a Super Bowl contender. And I think we'll find out if Tom Brady can overcome some weakness in the offensive line. And I think he can.
Yeah.
As long as he has good receivers. I think we learned that from his time in New England, is that he likes protection. He'd love protection, but he'd rather have guys that can get open and catch the ball and make something happen after.
Yeah. The thing with Brady is, like, I don't ever think he's going to be bad. Like, he's too good at football to ever be bad, but it's just like, if he's slightly incrementally worse, or how good can the Bucks be? And that's situational because of the offensive line injuries and the offensive line departures. The weirder Brady thing is, we took for granted, I'll pivot to Dak in a second, but we took for granted with Brady, we never had questions of how much he cared about football and how all in he is. And that's actually cropped up for the first time in 22 years in like the last couple of weeks. And obviously they're extenuating circumstances, but that's like weird around a team with Tom Brady. He has an entire method about how much he cares about football.
That's fair. I think I don't even know how to think about Tom Brady in that regard. It seemed to me, and everyone's seen these theories about what's going on. No one really knows, but he came back and said, "I'm 45, shit happens," or something like that. That felt ominous. Like, he didn't come back and do the thing that he's been doing his whole career. It's like, dismiss, oh, nothing, had a little thing, blah, 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 or make up a lie. He just came back and showed us that something ain't right. Right.
It's just like, this dude is probably the most consistent player in the history of football. And he's for the first time showing cracks of inconsistency in how he prepares and how he's going to perform. And that's not going to say he's going to be bad.
Right.
We are very clear on the Dominique Foxworth show. We think Tom Brady is good. He will continue to be good until he shows us otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
Do not aggregate us. But with that said, weird behavior. Yeah. Weird behavior.
So you're saying that you would not be shocked if he fell off?
I wouldn't be shocked if the Bucks are worse than they have in the last 2 years. And the Bucks, and the reason I say that is, like, the Bucks were you know, a couple plays away from maybe knocking off the Rams and maybe having another Super Bowl run because the way they pulled it together at the end of the season. And I wouldn't be shocked if that team is just takes a step back, not to be terrible, but just to be closer to mediocre.
That is some impressive take agility you just showed right there. I said, you would not be surprised if Tom Brady fell off and you were like, yeah, maybe the Bucs won't be as good. You're scared of saying that Tom Brady will be a little bit worse than he was last year.
All I did was learn my lesson from you, football genius, from you that, you know, quarterbacks are situationally dependent. So, two days ago, I learned my lesson.
Well done. Well done. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, so let's do the Dak Prescott conversation.
Yeah. Yes, let's do it.
I'll let you go first because I get angry.
And it's totally fair. It's like he's been the best quarterback in the division his like entire career. Dak Prescott is very good. He also, I think it is fair to say, has had a really nice situation built around him.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a consistent offensive coordinator in Kellen Moore for stability. He's had a really good offensive line. Illness and injury have affected that over time. For it's been ups and downs. He's had multiple number one receivers, multiple number one running backs, a tight end who came out of nowhere in Dalton Schultz. And this is the first time where, you know, they did not get a ton of compensation for Amari Cooper. They're replacing him with Jalen Tolbert, who's more of an unknown. Jerry Jones is weirdly committed to Ezekiel Elliott. The offensive line is worse. Tyron Smith is out. And like, situation's not great for Dak. We're going to learn a lot about Dak in worse situations now. And, you know, I don't think that they're the best team in the NFC East. I still think he's the best quarterback in the NFC East, but I don't think he's going to, I would be surprised if he has as good of a year as he wants and he's expecting.
Yeah. I agree with everything except for number one receivers. Like they had to trade a bunch away to get Amari Cooper because they didn't really have number one receiver. They got Amari Cooper and that offense started to hum a little bit more after that. So they're going back to a world where I guess CeeDee Lamb is their number one receiver. But he's not consistent hands-wise. He doesn't feel like he has grown into the type of number one that you would want. So he's in a tough situation. I guess the frustrating thing about this for me is there will be an overreaction to Dak's performance this season.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender. I don't think they're going to win the division. They may not even make the playoffs. They could make the playoffs, but they're one of those kind of fringe teams to me. And it feels to me like there will be a referendum on Dak's contract and his real ability. Were we overselling him? Was he surrounded by people and not that good? And that's going to upset me. So it's going to start week one because I would think that they're going to come up short against the Bucs and everyone's going to blame Dak because Jerry Jones wasn't able to build an offensive line or prepare for the aging and transition.
Is this sort of the plight of just the pretty good quarterback? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like where Dak is just a tier. He's pretty good, very good, but he's just a tier below the like, you know, he's fire breathing dragon who can carry most situations. Yeah. And like it's unfair, but he's going to shoulder the blame for other things. And when it's flipped, he'll get the praise for like a good roster around him as well.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have the eye popping like arm talent that some of those top tier guys do. And I think that's the difference between him and them. And I think he's probably ahead of a lot of those top guys mentally. And that's how he makes up for the lack of arm talent and ability to do these wild plays. But he's done all the things that you say that you want your quarterback to do, like lead game winning drives in the playoffs, like do all that stuff. And he's the like perfect spokesperson. He doesn't do anything wrong. He says the right thing, and people still try to find a way to hate on Dak Prescott. But we'll see what happens in this game. But I think the Bucs pull it off, and Dallas's defense is not up for the challenge. But we're going to leave this game feeling differently about them, and it might also be fool's gold, because I don't think we know how good, if the Bucs win, I don't think we know how good the Cowboys are. But it's not like the biggest fool's gold game to me. That's Chiefs cards. Okay. Is I think the Chiefs could potentially struggle in this game like they did against the Browns at the beginning of the last season. This year, they are going to be kind of reconfiguring things, trying to figure out how to do things post Tyreek Hill and focusing a little bit more on the running game, for what I understand, and transitioning on defense, or transitioning some new guys in on defense. And the Cardinals, they are early season team. They were like the best team in football through 9 weeks last year, I believe. And the year before that, they were up there too. And then they fall off at the end of the year. I think this is a possible upset. The Chiefs could lose, and we're going to be doing the same thing we were doing to Aaron Rodgers last year to Patrick Mahomes. What do you got?
I agree with a lot of them, but I think they're going to kill the Cardinals. I just don't think the Cardinals are going to be that good this year. And I think they're going to struggle early in the season. It's going to be too late. One of the most fascinating things is what the Chiefs are actually going to look like, because we don't know. This is it's going to be change. It's going to be a change in an offense that has been really stable. Like it's crazy to call something that's so like boom or bust really stable, but they've been stable in that pattern of like driving the ball down the field, scoring quickly, being dominant in short spurts for Patrick Mahomes' entire career. I think the fact that the Cardinals don't know what to expect, they are, for lack of a better term, pooping their pants right now. Patrick Mahomes, when you don't know what to expect from the offense around him, has to be the most terrifying thing in football.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm giving a little bit too much credit to Vance Joseph and that defense. Because, yeah, like, as we say all the time, is like defense does not always transition from year to year. But they've been really good on defense. They were top five team on defense last year. And I guess that's my expectation, is that the transition from the Chiefs to their new version of chiefiness, combined with a well-coached and a good defense, could slow them down some. And Kyler Murray early in the season is great. And we could walk away like, damn, did the Chiefs really need Tyreek Hill? Like, I could see that storyline forming. And if that's the case, I'll be here to tell you. Remember when the Packers lost 38-3? Last year to the Saints? Let's not overreact. They'll be okay. But it's a game I'm looking forward to.
Oh, I think it's the most fun game to watch. I can't wait.
You think it's the most fun game? I think shootout between the Raiders and the Chargers might be the most fun game. There's going to be points galore. And anytime Derwin.
Yeah, the AFC West. Anything in the AFC West is must watch. And half of the Chiefs are half that matchup.
Yeah. Anytime Derwin James is on the field, I'm watching. And I want to see this newer version of Justin Herbert with a lot of pressure on him and with another year of evolution going up against a really bad defense from a year ago, which like only played cover three. I was looking at coverage splits this morning, and they were damn near 100% cover three. The Raiders were last year. And now they are taking their players and who were like majored in cover three. Well, they did trade for Rock Ya-Sin, but other than that, all these other guys majored in cover three, and now they're going to be putting them in other coverages in tough situations against Justin Herbert, who can hit anybody running anywhere at any point of the field from any angle or off one foot. I think that it's going to be a problem, and Derek Carr is going to have to outscore him. Like, that's it. Derek Carr and Hunter Renfrow and Waller and Devontae Adams, they're going to have to go nuts to make this game competitive, especially if my man Brandon Staley keeps disrespecting fourth down, which I love. Keep doing it. Go for it every fourth down. They can't stop you.
I got two questions.
All right.
Do you think this is the year that Justin Herbert really, like, I mean, he's been awesome every time he's been in the NFL, but really establishes himself elite performance-wise with, like, the top guys? Because He's so fun to watch. Like, so simple. He throws the ball really hard and really far, and it's awe-inspiring.
Yeah. If not now, then when? Like, I think he has to. This is probably going to be the most talented team he's going to have around him. Because, like, they're going to have to pay him. They're going to have to pay Rashawn Slater. They've already paid Derwin James. And they're going to be reliant on their front office to replenish and to nail a bunch of draft picks like they've already done so far. And that's unlikely, because as much effort and time as teams put into the draft, we don't really see any evidence that anybody really knows what they're doing. So when your team drafts well, appreciate it. Because next year or the year after that, sooner or later, they're going to draft poorly. And I think the Chargers are due for some comeuppance. And yeah. Herbert's going to be in that position where everyone's going to be like, well, can Justin Herbert put the team on his back now? Maybe he can. And that might be the difference between a player like him and Dak Prescott, because that's where Patrick Mahomes lives, in that world where now we're starting to lose people like Tyreek Hill. And we're going to find out how important they were and how flexible or how flexible your team is based on how talented you can be, how special you are. So I think he has to step up this year. If he doesn't do it this year, then when's he going to do it?
Yeah, it's weird, because you watch Justin Herbert and you obviously want to crown him. I certainly do. I want him in fantasy. I want to watch him on Red Zone. I want to see him pop up all the time. But then you look at the overall numbers sometimes, and you're like, is he ready to be at that Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen level? And that's an impossible standard.
Yeah, the Josh Allen leap, as we've talked about, is not something you can count on. It's not something that anyone ever does, except for that one time that Josh Allen did it. Mm-hmm. But improving is like reasonable for a quarterback at his age at this point in his career. But it would just have to be his own personal improvement, because it's not like we're like for Joe Burrow. He was great last year, but you could argue that he's going to get better because they got better around them on the offensive line.
And the year after his major injury, like another year, real off season, like, Burrow's he's sick.
So we'll see what Herbert does. I'm high on Herbert. I think they win that game. They're hosting the Raiders. And I think they outscore the Raiders, because the Raiders are going to have some resistance, because the Chargers are also loaded on defense, adding Khalil Mack to that pass rush. And as I mentioned before, Derwin James is as close to a perfect football player. I mean, like, next to Aaron Donald, like, I think Derwin James, if he stays healthy, he's that special. He doesn't, he hasn't had the ability to stay healthy, so I don't think people have seen it and appreciated it, but he's that special.
Side note on Derwin James, if you are a sports nerd and you want to realize just how incredible of an athlete Derwin James is, just go to YouTube. If you're watching us, pause the video, come back. Type in Derwin James dunks, because they are preposterous. They are like NBA dunk contest winning dunks. I know that's a tangent, but like, he's like 6'2".
You know me. I love a tangent. I'd rather do a tangent than anything else. So I am now Googling Derwin James dunks, and y'all just going to have to wait while I watch these dunks. I don't know. Maybe Christina can edit this so you guys don't have to wait that long.
Probably my top football player dunker at this point.
Oh, the first one off the top. Okay. All right. I'm back. I only needed to see one, honestly. I'm done. That is.
They're preposterous. They're preposterous.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I love Derwin James so much. I can't wait to see him for a full healthy season. He got paid this offseason. I love when people get paid. Nothing makes me happier than players getting big checks. All right. So the biggest test this weekend is another really interesting point to focus on. And I might surprise you with this one, but I think the Bengals and the Steelers is going to be the biggest test, in part because of the thing, or not in part, because completely because of the thing we talked about, the new offensive line.
Yeah.
So I picked at Matt Stafford a little bit because he tried to throw away the AFC championship game or the NFC championship game by throwing a ball directly into the chest of a safety. Joe Burrow did the same thing in the fourth quarter, except it was a linebacker. It was even more inexplicable than Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford at least was like, oh, he just threw it up. He couldn't see. Joe Burrow was rolling out of the pocket to his right, if I remember correctly, and threw it to a man right in front of him who dropped it in the fourth quarter of that Chiefs game. So we remember him quite differently for the way he balled out in other in all other situations. But that is why this to me feels like a big test game, because the Steelers have a good pass rush. We need to figure out how good this offensive line, revamped offensive line, actually is. And we also need to figure out how good the Bengals actually are, because their playoff run is why people are really high on him, and because Burrow's really good. But if you look back at that playoff run, it was a close game that they easily could have lost to the Raiders, if I remember correctly. Nobody's talking about the Raiders like the Raiders are a Super Bowl champ or Super Bowl contender. They weren't last year. I don't believe them to really be this year either. They had the game against the Titans that Joe Burrow got sacked a record number of times, and they kind of barely won that game because, frankly, Jamar Chase made some impossible plays. Burrow wasn't really, like, carrying them. Jamar Chase made some impossible plays. Burrow got sacked a ton of time, and McPherson hit a bunch of bomb kicks. So they could have lost that game also. Then they were getting, frankly, dominated by the Chiefs until just before half, Patrick Mahomes failed to score a touchdown, and the Chiefs offense failed to score a touchdown or get any points out of that halftime situation. And then they came back and beat them. And we remember this because Joe Burrow had a great regular season and he made pivotal important plays and made it all the way to the Super Bowl. And we remember this, like, the Bengals became something different. They took some step. And it's also possible that just gotta random their way into a good run, and maybe they are not as good as we're talking about or we're expecting from them. Like, I don't think they're going to beat the Ravens. I don't think they're going to win a division.
Well, I think it can be both. Like, Joe Burrow is, I think Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase are that good. Yeah. And I also think that they got incredibly lucky that Ryan Tannehill threw them the ball three times in the second round of the playoffs and they were all atrocious. Like, that shouldn't happen either against the number one seed.
Right.
So that was super lucky. Yeah. But, like, can I pitch you one thing on the Steelers?
Love it.
You know, I think I'm higher in the Bengals than you are, and I think them and the Ravens at the top of that division is a total toss up, just because the Ravens are also going to regress from bad luck. I kind of think the Steelers are going to be better than we're giving them credit for. Also, I know they made the playoffs last year, but I think a lot of people are writing them off. Quarterback play can't get worse. I don't care if it's Mitch Trubisky; It legit can't get worse than Big Ben last year.
Yeah.
And that alone, with the fact that you talk about culture and institutional stability, like, Tomlin's never had a losing season. Like, that's as good of a culture and stable institution as possible. And, like, I don't expect Trubisky to be good. I think Kenny Pickett, who knows, is a rookie quarterback. We never know about rookie quarterbacks, really. But based on everything we've seen and heard, George Pickens is a freak of nature.
Oh my gosh.
Unbelievable receivers. And they don't have Ben Roethlisberger. I don't understand why the offense wouldn't be a little bit better.
I mean, the receiving core is also a reason for a test for the Bengals, because that is, I mean, it feels bad saying it's a weak spot, the corner position and defending the pass, because
you're gonna get yelled at online.
Yeah,
Eli Apple's mom is coming for you.
I defended Eli Apple.
I know,
because. Yeah, I mean, I defended Eli Apple as a cornerback. I saw the way people were treating him, and they were completely unfair. But I ain't about to sit up and pretend like he's Jalen Ramsey now. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I do think that's another – being able to match up against those guys, not very many people in the league can do it. We'll find out if they can. That is another reason why it's a big test for the Bengals. And I'm not sure that Mitchell Trubisky is bad. Like, I fully believe he's going to be better than Ben Roethlisberger was last year. And I might think potentially that in this new situation, he can be average to slightly above average. The only problem is the offensive line.
Yeah.
But the
big problem.
Yeah, it's a big problem, but he has playmakers and he has a defense and he has a coach. And the new name of this podcast, he has institutional stability.
Yeah.
And that matters to me. And if he can't succeed here or at least show some hope, then maybe we should be completely out on him. But what happened to him in Chicago made no sense.
Yeah.
He was a pretty good athletic quarterback. Then they stopped doing athletic quarterback things with him. Then he was bad. And then they ran him out of town. And I don't know. We'll see how it works out there. The other game that I think is a big test is kind of obvious, maybe. It's the 49ers and the Bears. It's all about Trey Lance.
Yeah.
It's all about Trey Lance. Like, I don't think Trey Lance has to be great, but there are huge question marks because he played at a lower level and he didn't play that much football in general. So to see how he performs in this game against a probably pretty bad football team.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to check the box. Like, Trey Lance, we need you to check the box of beating the Bears. And I know wins are not a quarterback stat. Nita Kimes, don't yell at us for that. But in this one, when you're playing the Bears, Trey Lance, you can't play poorly enough that it keeps your Super Bowl contending team from beating the Bears.
Yeah, wins are not a quarterback stat, except for in San Francisco, where they obviously are. Jimmy Garoppolo, like, that's his biggest stat. You point to that every week. That's all anyone points to. You know how much he wins, though.
Yeah, yeah. When he's winning on and off the field.
Yeah, good for him. All right. Last one is Broncos Seahawks. I think that is when I will turn on House of Dragon and run it on a second screen.
Yes, like, I totally agree.
I want to watch it because, like, Russ going back home, and I want to make sure maybe it falls into a check the box game where just, like, make sure you guys don't fall apart. Like, you should beat the Seahawks handily. I want to see all that. So I'll have it on. But this, I'm going to have to rewatch a lot of these games and watch the coaching tape and break them down. I don't plan on doing that for this game because I don't see the Seahawks as a real test.
I care more about the pregame. I care more about seeing the first 5 minutes of this game and how they talk about it than I do the actual game. I'm not even going to pretend. If Damon Targaryen is cooking, coming out with, like, body parts of the crab feeder, it might not even be on mute. Like, the Broncos Seahawks might just be off. That's an hour of me time.
Yeah, they should move that. They need to move that to another day, because Sunday, I don't know. It's one of those things that I did watch live. One of the few things, House of Dragon is one of the few things that I did watch live. Not this week and not any other week until, like, they won't be on in February. So I will never watch House of Dragon live again. I don't know. I got to look through the Sunday night schedule. There might be some stinky Sunday night games that might get House of Dragon. What you got for me on Nick Kyrgios, Coco Gauff loss? Like, I watched both of those matches. I wanted to find some space for this. I don't know if people care about it, but I do.
Okay. Let's go to Coco first. Can knock this out quickly. Sometimes you lose. She's had an incredible season. I think she's probably the second best player in the world, women's player in the world. Caroline Garcia is like as hot as a tennis player can be right now. The Kyrgios thing, I think you can sort of choose your own adventure with this. Like, some people are celebrating his demise because he's a tennis disruptor. I actually found it sad. He was the best player in the tournament. He got hurt last night, and normally his outbursts are inexplicable and are not. So it could be awkward. Him being frustrated because his calf couldn't cooperate and he couldn't move and he couldn't play tennis at that level showed that he actually cared for once. And, like, Dominic, I think you can explain this. It is so rare to be as good at a sport as Nick Kyrgios, to be someone who can basically wait until he's 27 to start trying and then become one of the five best players in the world again at something. And, you know, I wanted to see him succeed. Yeah. He's the most entertaining player in the world. And it's also like it bucks all the trends of normalcy in tennis. So I'm actually bummed that he lost to, you know, Karen Khachanov, who looks identical to Liam Hemsworth.
He did a through between the leg shot. He is fun to watch. His racket bashing is, I mean, I did not grow up in tennis, so I do not respect their constructs as much as other people do. So, like, when somebody's getting a haircut in the stands, which actually did happen, I'm not bothered by that. And Nick Kyrgios busting up his racket, like, I don't care. I'm not the guy that's like, but for the kids.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, fine. So if it offends them, that's whatever. But the idea that he actually is justified in his anger right now, like, I guess that makes sense, but it was fun to watch. And him being out, we got reasons for me to continue watching is Francis. That's it. Because I really wanted Coco to go to the finals and it'd be like this American torch passing and Serena be there and Coco win would have been great, but that didn't work out. And so now it's just Tiafoe.
I want to pitch you on another thing, and this is going to go up after this match, so I'm just going to hope he wins.
Okay.
But Carlos Alcaraz. Uh-huh. And like, so to me, there's no more fun thing in sports than like the rise of prodigy before we ruin them with expectations. Cause it's like, we don't know what's possible.
We're awful. And
but like, look, this kid's 19 and he's the most athletic tennis player I've probably ever seen.
Yeah. You sent me some clips. It was incredible.
He does stuff that looks impossible and he'll become a big deal if he wins this tournament somehow. And that's distinctly possible. He might have already lost this match when you're listening, but regardless, don't ruin him and call him a failure. He's awesome. He's sick. He can play any sport and would be sick at it.
All right. What you got planned this weekend? Just football binging?
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Anything this is else? A couch weekend. No. I'm texting you from the couch and refreshing Twitter.
Can't wait. All right, brother.
Sorry. That made me sound like a complete loser, but it's true.
Yeah. No, it did. It made you sound like everybody else. Like, and you won't be just texting me. You'll be like a group chat of cool, exciting, famous people whose names we won't mention because then you guys will realize that they're not that cool, exciting or famous.
That's right.
All right. So as you mentioned earlier, I don't have any fan allegiance, which I have to admit makes the season a little less fun and also a little happier at times because I see some miserable people after their team gets their asses kicked or knocked out of playoffs, but I want to get engaged this year. So we need a show team. Who is the team that our show is going to root for? So I would like to know who everybody who's associated with the show right now roots for. So I can start with you, Charlie, and then we'll go to Addie, Sarah, and Christina.
I'm sadly a Washington Commanders fan.
Nope.
We're not rooting for that. Dan Snyder, you're not getting another dollar of my money ever again. We're not. That's not the show team.
Okay. Do you have a suggestion or you just wanted to make us all sad?
You asked me who I grew up rooting for.
I did. Do you have a team that you want to suggest? No?
Yeah.
Oh, we can come back to you.
Yeah, I did. Okay, come back to me.
All right, we'll come back to you. Christina, who do you love?
I am a Steelers fan.
Ooh, I got another big nope right there. I grew up in Baltimore and I played for the Ravens. And y'all don't have a quarterback. It's not going to be fun rooting for sack fumbles all year.
True.
Addie and Sarah, you got some hope for us? Addie, who do you?
You're going to hate me even more. Born and raised in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm a Patriots fan.
No.
Goodness gracious. Actually, I don't hate you even more, but I do hate that because who the hell wants to root for the Patriots, especially when they're not good?
It's about to get worse. Just wait for who Sarah roots for.
Are you feeling this pressure, Sarah? Where are you from, first of all?
I'm actually from California, Nebraska.
Ooh, okay. That's hope.
Yeah.
That's hope, California.
Yeah, with that being said, I root for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
So. Oh. I don't know. All right, Charlie, we're back to you, man. Who is this show going to root for? Do we open it up to the listeners? Because I can't root for none of those damn teams.
We're not going to be front runners. Like, you know, yeah, I think the crossover of our heart, me and Dominique would root for the 49ers just because we're Shanna stands.
Yeah.
Can I pitch
like
you
that.
On one?
I can get
like
on with that.
Okay. Let's go with the Panthers.
Where did that come from?
No one's going to expect it from
us.
Okay. No
so,
one. And also, like,
here we go.
We're the number one Baker podcast.
We're Baker's number one fans.
So, my dad is from Charlotte. I don't know. I assume you didn't know that, Charlie. So, I can get in on that. I used to go to Charlotte for Thanksgiving every year. I like Carolina. I do. So you got me rooting for Matt Rhule and Baker? All right. Well, I don't know. We'll tentatively be Baker fans. I think we all want them to beat the Browns this weekend. So that could be a fun start. We'll see how it goes. And I ain't above jumping ship. So
neither am I.
We'll see. Anyway, thank you all again for everything that you've done to make this show possible and for telling me about your horrible teenings, Christina Buswell, Addie Kahn, Sarah Abbott, and of course you, Charlie Kravitz, and our great listeners. We need a name for the listeners. I don't know what it's going to be, but do the listeners name themselves or do we name them? I don't know. Anyway, that's that. See you next time.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.